Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga.
Rechte Neckfahne mit dem linken Fuß. Bringt den Ball auf den zweiten Pfosten. Tesche! Tor! 1:0 für den VfL Bochum.
Da draußen ist der Ball frei. Und jetzt ist er drin. Jetzt ist er drin. Und hier ist Potzen, macht das Tor.
Und er ist drin. Buchmann. Buchmann. Buchmann macht das zweite Tor. Da ist das Tor. Der zählt das 2:2. Dresden ist wieder da. Röser ist da.
Für Rausch, der setzt an zur Flanke, da kommt der Ball, Tor, 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 Tor.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, and welcome to the Zweite Bundesliga podcast with me, Johnny Walsh. I am once again joined today by Matthew Karagic. Matthew, how are you doing?
Very well, Johnny, thank you.
And Eva is back once again after a weekend in Leipzig. Eva, how are things with you?
Very good, thank you very much.
Happy days. We're all good and we're all ready to discuss Zweite Bundesliga. But before we start, I just want to, on a personal note, mention that it is a year to the day since Switzerland beat Northern Ireland in World Cup qualifying, and I'm still not over it. And when I woke up this morning and the first thing that I saw was memories on Facebook, and that had come up, I just wanted to go back to bed. But anyway, who wouldn't want to get out of bed to do this wonderful podcast with two wonderful people? That is the question I asked you, and the question that we asked you on Twitter, at least, was about relegation and the four sides that are the bottom four teams inside the Bundesliga at the moment. So we said it's hotting up at the top of the table and equally in the relegation zone. 1 point separates 15 from bottom, and we want to know, out of the current bottom four, that is, who is the likeliest to avoid the drop? Is it MSV Duisburg, SV Sandhausen, FC Ingolstadt, or FC Magdeburg? Matthew, we'll start with you. Where are you going with this one?
Yeah, Duisburg for mine. I think they've got, well, they've improved a lot under Thorsten Lieberknecht, and they, you know, for mine, they have the best squad going forward. They've got good, you know, decent, a solid midfielder. I think Moritz Doppelkamp, who was their drive last season. He's coming back from injury. They still need to figure out who's going to be their leader going forward, whether it's going to be Boris Tashi, or is it going to be fan favourite Richie Sakutapaso, or it'll be Jean Verhoek. They've got to figure that out. But once they've got a striker banging in the goals, I think they will be able to climb out of that bottom four section.
I think of all the teams, at least in this bracket, apart from maybe Ingolstadt, we definitely expected an awful lot more from MSV Duisburg, but I think as much as we are talking about MSV Duisburg turning a corner, Ingolstadt just haven't really managed to do that. They're drawing games now rather than losing them. But Eva, it's been a really tough start for Alexander Nuri, and it doesn't show any signs of easing anytime soon.
Yeah, especially, so we're going to speak about that later as well, I guess, seeing how they're performing against teams that are more or less in the same position they are. And I don't really see them fighting them out of their current situation anytime soon, actually.
I don't see that happening anytime soon either, and it just doesn't seem to be clicking for them one way or another, and whether or not that will start and click soon, we're going to have to see. Matthew, how do you see the situation with Ingolstadt at the moment?
Well, I mean, where do you start? They've got issues across the board defensively. I think they've been very ordinary. The midfield has not really settled into the system as of such. I mean, it is a 3-5-2. I mean, it's been a struggle all around, and then up front they've had real trouble converting their chances. You have a look at the guys like Dario Lescano; he has a goal and an assist, and this is the person that Ingolstadt valued at €5 million. They told Nuremberg to fork out. So they've got real issues going forward. The midfield is underachieving. I think getting Alma Cohen back is a big win. I reckon he can make a good, formidable partnership with Konstantin Kirschbaum. And defensively, they just need to tighten up. They've really struggled to keep teams away from their final third. And I mean, if they can figure it out, they have a chance, but it's not looking likely at the moment.
Yeah, they've found things really, really difficult, and for one reason or another, things just haven't quite clicked, which I suppose, given the outlay that they have put out this summer, it is a little bit worrying that things haven't managed to get going just quite yet. We'll see if they do manage to turn things around, however. We spoke about Duisburg, we spoke about Ingolstadt. I think it's time to give Sandhausen their time in the spotlight. Eva, they've definitely turned a corner since Uwe Koshinat came in. They've at least been finding goals. They do look a little bit more stable defensively. Do you think they could get out of this as well?
Yeah, I actually would go with them or Duisburg on that side, because they managed so many times to get out of that situation. I don't know, the 9th or 10th time in a row there in the second Bundesliga now. And I think that gives a lot of self-confidence. So they know the league, they know how it's going, and I'm quite sure that they will find their way out of that situation in the near future.
I think a lot of people have Sandhausen down as a sort of second side, if you will, as one that they always look to do well because they are so small. Matthew, I think as much as they did draw 0-0 with MSV Duisburg, which both sides sort of recognised as a good point because neither of them lost that six-pointer, it's been great for them to have Fabian Schleusner and Andrew Wooten form such a formidable partnership already together.
Agreed, and Schleusner has come leaps upon bounds. He's played some very good football. He is very good with the ball. He has a good eye for goal as well. And I think, the thing with Andrew Wooten is, at times he's not always consistent. He's always had to deal with injuries, but he's showcased when he's been able to play what a better side they are. So I guess keeping him healthy and then keeping Schleusner active is very much going to be a key for Uwe Koshinat and Sandhausen.
That is for sure. And last but not least, we have SFC Magdeburg, who did indeed sack Jens Hertel yesterday after a long stint in charge of the club, took them from Regionalliga into Zweite Bundesliga for the first time. He has now been sacked. It's going to be a big, big job for someone to fill. I've heard rumours of Uwe Neuhaus taking over there. Eva, it's definitely not all lost for them. They still have a very good chance of making it out of the situation that they are in. But it is going to be very, very tough, especially given the lack of confidence that is in this side.
Yeah, they had their fourth defeat in a row, so nobody understands better than I at the moment how that feels like. I don't know if it was a bit too early. I can't really tell, but they show a couple of good games, but in the majority of them, they weren't really good. So maybe it's time to change the coach, because maybe he has not that much of second Bundesliga experience. If they could get Uwe Neuhaus, I think that would be a huge win for them.
Yeah, a coach who has plenty of Zweite Bundesliga experience, especially with sides from Eastern Germany, it would be a great, great appointment for them, and one which I'm sure they would be very happy to make. Matthew, do you think Uwe Neuhaus can turn this around? It is a big job, but they do have very, very good players in this side who we have seen can play well, but for one reason or another, they just can't hang on to a lead.
Yeah, their mental confidence is absolutely shot at the moment, and they find ways to lose. And that would be whoever the new manager is, whether it's Uwe Neuhaus or whoever they eventually announce. They have a tough job, because to try and reinstill that confidence that they had from last season. Yes, it's a harder league, but they are just at the moment they look shot. They can't. For some reason at home, they can't find a way to hold on to a lead. And I've got to feel sorry for Jens Hartl, who, he's done all this work to get them here. And, yeah, they haven't played great football, but, they've been in a lot of games where they could have easily gone and won. But for one way or another, they haven't. So, Yeah. Either way, whoever's taking over, it's going to be a big task to keep them up.
It certainly is, and I think the fact that when you look at Magdeburg and the games that they have been ahead in, at home especially, it's games you would expect them to go on and win. They haven't done that. Of the six times they've been ahead this season, they've only won once, which doesn't make for great readings. 13 points dropped already, and when you add that to the 9 they have, if they just hung on to the league lead in those games, they would be a point behind St. Pauli in fourth, which I think says it all, really. Moving on from that section and towards our goal of the week poll, Louis Schaub came out on top with that one, with 45%, Bakary Iata with 35%, Mark Schnatter 13%, and other 7%, all of which was Baris Atik, although more people actually commented Baris Atik than voted other, which is a little bit strange, but you do you, as they say. Matthew, I don't know, I think I loved Schaub's goal, don't get me wrong, but there's just something about a volley going in off the bar that I really, really like.
Yeah, no, see, I do agree with you. There is nothing better than a powerful ball hitting the crossbar and going in, but there was something about Schaub's goal that was just different. It just had something special. I mean, he does water control possession. He goes completely Iron Robin-esque, but, you know, much better. It cuts onto his left-hand side, and that ball is so perfectly hit into the top corner. It was poetry emotional. Showing a friend at work the goal, and even he had to gasp in amazement. And you know, that's for me, that is at this moment the goal of the season.
I'm really looking forward to seeing him do that at Windsor Park on Sunday and relegate us to the third tier of the UEFA Nations League. Hopefully that is not the case. Bosnia, please do us a favour. Eva, would you have gone for Schaub's goal?
Yeah, probably, because it was a perfect ending to that match for Köln. Although it was like the goal by Atik was before then, so it was kind of an answer to that. So Köln was like, okay, well, we can do wonderful goals as well. But yeah, I think it was a really, really great goal.
It was a very good answer to that Attic goal, there is no doubt about that. I suppose the only omission that we can say from now with hindsight, although this poll went up yesterday, is Tom Vilanth's absolute stunner against Darmstadt. We can't forget about that. I think, you know, when we see these goals from these sorts of players, you immediately think goal of the century. But that's just me. I mean, it was a wonderful strike, and Bochum deservedly won that game, I would say. But we'll come on to that. For once, I don't have to cower in fear of doing this, and I can actually enjoy looking back on winning a game. How strange a feeling that is, not conceding in the 90th minute. That's what we're going to do next. Yes, we will begin our Match Day 13 roundup with a look at our Group 1 games. We're going to start with a trip to the capital with Union against Greuther Fürth. That ended in a pretty comprehensive win for Union, who were 3-0 up at halftime and cruising, might I add. Fürth had some chances in the game, never really took them, and Union, who I would say could have played better than they did, ended up comfortable winners thanks to their finishing. And when you have Joshua Mies and Sebastian Polta and Sebastian Andersson on the bench along with Simon Hedlund, I think you're doing okay for depth in that regard. Matthew, not what we expected, really. It was an awful lot more comfortable than we thought.
You know, two sides that are, you know, in the upper echelon of the table. We were probably expecting a bit more of a tighter contest, but fair play to Union, who, you know, they took all their chances early on, and they really, you know, were able to cure the game from half an hour to the final 90. I mean, you know, Keitarua had that good chance after they went 2-0 down, and then shortly after, Sebastian Polter made it 3, and yeah. It's a flattering result for Fürth. But, you know, it's a result that Union desperately needed. You know, they had four draws in the league leading up to this. And, you know, to beat a team that's in the same bracket as you competing for that that playoff or even promotional spot, it's a crucial win for them.
Union, of course, are still unbeaten. 5 wins, 8 draws. Not something you normally see when it comes to the side maintaining an unbeaten run, but nevertheless, they are still keeping it going. 13 games in now. We'll see how long that does indeed last. Eva, are we maybe seeing Foot starting to slip down the table? A late draw against Bochum, a defeat here. Things have been a little bit mixed in recent weeks. Do you think we're maybe seeing Foot start to plateau?
Yeah, I don't really know, because I think, as Matthew said, it was more or less a lucky win, especially with 4 goals, which may be caused by the very, very early substitution for Foot, and then they were not in order at all, so everything fell apart. I think they were just a bit unlucky in the past matches, but credits to Union as well. So I remember saying last week that they need to score more than 1 or 2 goals to actually win a game, and they did. So that's a lot of confidence for them now to actually win one game, but I'm quite sure that Fürth will come out of that situation again. It was just, they just had a couple of games that weren't that good, like they were in the beginning, but that is Zweite Bundesliga as well, so I think there is not too much to read into that.
It certainly is very topsy-turvy, and I think, where do you start with this next game? Dynamo in good form coming into this one, had been playing fairly well under Mike Valpurgis. They get to Köln. I think Bilt have interviewed a sports psychologist or something, saying that Köln's kits confused them. I don't know how much a kit can confuse you to lose 8-1, but, I mean, what do you do? That is sports psychology for you. Just the 8-1 win for SFC Köln against Dynamo Dresden. Matthew, where do we start? Is there a right place to start? I don't really know.
They were ruthless, and you know that's something we kind of expected Köln to be for majority of the season, to dominate and convert chances, and unfortunately for Dresden, it happened to be that the 1 week that they were, you know, they didn't look like missing it was against them, and yeah, they were fantastic. The change of system was quite, it worked very well, playing, you know, what was essentially a 3-5-2 with Cordoba and Torreira up front. You know, it's positive when they score 5 of the 8 goals, and just the clinicalness in front of goals. I mean, if 8 of your 12 shots on target end in goals, I mean, you're doing more than everything right. Someone give Marcus Schubert a hug, because that dude, he didn't deserve it. There was not a lot he did wrong in that game, and just every time they went forward, Köln, they were going to score.
And on that point, credit to the likes of Jorge Mere, John Cordoba, and Simon Terodde for quickly going over to console the young goalkeeper. As you say, he didn't do anything wrong in the game. There was nothing he could have done with those 8 goals. It's just one of those days as a goalkeeper, and anyone who has been a goalkeeper will know where you literally just want the ground to swallow you up. But you'll come back the next week, make 8 amazing saves, keep a clean sheet, and everything will be right and rosy again. The only thing I would say about losing 8-1 is it's better to lose 8-1 once than lose, 1-0 8 times. So hopefully for Dynamo's sake, that's that result out of their system. Eva, I don't know, it's pretty hard to analyse this one other than say that Köln were pretty much perfect.
Yeah, although I think in the middle of the first half, there was less going on. So they finished the first half with 2-0 in front. So I guess some Köln fans were afraid that they start to, they just fall asleep again in the second half, but that was more like Dresden's turn then, and that was the time when Köln nearly scored every 5 minutes and Dresden was done, although a lot of credits to the Dresden fans that supported throughout the whole match, and I think that's really, really great. I feel sorry for Dresden, but for Köln it's great to finally win the match after 4 matches without a win. But they have to keep, like, it makes no sense just to win one game 8-1 and then keep playing like they played before, because HSV is 3 points ahead of them, and they really have to keep playing football like they did on Saturday.
Hopefully they can do just that. It was a funny one on Saturday, and just as you mentioned, the Dynamo support, they were excellent throughout, and when Baris Atik scored, wonderful goal as well that it was, they started singing Auswärtig, so credit to them for making light of being, I think it was 6-1 down at the time. There's not too many groups of supporters who would enjoy that as much as they did, but fair play to them. Our final game of Group 1 features 8 goals, but this time evenly distributed. Paderborn 4, Holstein Kiel 4, an absolute humdinger of a game. Yet another 4-4 involving Paderborn. There's been 50 goals in their 13 league games this season, the same as Köln, and it's probably no surprise to anyone that there was 8 goals in the game between Paderborn and Köln, just as things would have it. Matthew, I think this is probably a fair result, but what a ding-dong game.
Yeah, if you wanted to open the textbook of how not to defend, this was very much the game for that. Both teams really didn't show themselves as a good defensive side. And, I mean, when you concede in the opening minute, it kind of set the tone for what the game was going to be like, which was just tons of goals, plenty of opportunities. And, very rarely would you say a 4-4 was a fair result, but I think on the reflection of the full 90, I don't think either team really deserved to win, but in the same time, neither deserved to lose. It was a very weird game, and, you know, yeah, it's hard to put your finger on it. It was good for the neutral, put it that way.
As soon as Kiel went 3-2 up, I just had that feeling that this was going to end in a 4-4. I don't know why, but I think it's just the whole Paderborn factor where you're going to get more goals no matter what time is left in the game. It was the same against Magdeburg in their game that ended 4-4. And it was the same here. I don't know. They just, for love nor money, can't keep a clean sheet. But equally, they just love to score goals. This was a really, really fun one to watch. Eva, a point shared is probably a fair result. But both sides doing pretty well this season, given, you know, Paderborn newly promoted and Kiel lost an awful lot of key players. They are both still managing to keep things going.
Yeah, I think, but that's again a lot of promotion for the Zweite Bundesliga. You can achieve everything here because although we have HSV in Köln, the rest of the league just does what they want or do what they want, and that is. It's great to watch if you're not one of the bottom teams. And especially, I think the interesting fact in that match was after the break where Paderborn was 3-1 in lead, Kiel was as close to the 3-2 as Paderborn was to the 4-1. And I think that says everything you need to know about that game, that a 4-4 was the fair result in the end.
It was quite something indeed, and hopefully for everyone's sake, Paderborn and Köln's goal-scoring exploits continue. Kiel as well haven't been too bad either. They just keep scoring late goals or conceding them. Thankfully, our next team, VfL Bochum, didn't do that this week. Spared me a little bit of dignity at the dinner I was at last night. It's time to move on to Group 2. So from Group 1, we move to Group 2 with significantly less goals, unfortunately. Across some of the games, we had 8. Across these 3 games, we have the measly total of 3, which is a little bit disappointing. But we start with something that is very happy and very good, and that is a 1-0 win for VfL Bochum against Darmstadt. As much as I do like Darmstadt, I was very, very happy that they didn't decide to ruin my evening once more and join Jan and Foot as the teams that caused me heartache in the 90th minute. Can't forget Kiel for doing that either. Matthew, back on track, and by all accounts, it was a dominant performance and a well-deserved win.
Yeah, they played some really good football going forward, and They kept the Darmstadt defense very honest, and you know it takes sometimes a moment of brilliance to break the deadlock, and Tommy Vaillant did so in very good style, and you'd have to say since coming back from Kiel on loan, he certainly he's become the player I think Bochum fans have wanted him to be, to be that offensive option secondary to Lucas Hinterseer, and yeah, certainly one that is, you know, going to be a driving force for Bochum going forward.
You say that when he's out of contract in the summer, and we all know what that means. Yay! We have far too many players out of contract this summer. Jamara, Hinterseer, Cruz, Lee, who else? Sydney Sam, and yeah. Vaillant, Höglund, Bach. There's a lot of work for Sessi to do, but hopefully he can grant us quite a few Christmas presents coming up to the holiday season, and we can have some contract renewals before I start to worry about players signing pre-contract deals. Hopefully that doesn't happen. Stay with Bochum. Eva, what did you make of this one? Bochum managed to get the 3 points, finally get over the line, but Darmstadt just didn't seem to be in this game, really.
No, they had, I think, there some chances, but it was leaking the real danger, and I think there were another great saves by Riemann, and Bochum was from the beginning on the more active team, and so really good that they actually managed to get that over 90 minutes, and that amazing solo by Vaillant. So that led to the deserved lead in the game, so I think they finally had their heads up until the 90th minutes, and that is huge step forward, I guess.
It certainly is, and up to fifth now, the march towards the Bundesliga steps up a notch once more. I say that in jest, we're not going to get promoted. Moving on, we have Sandhausen against MSV Duisburg, and when we're talking about games that lacked goals, this one sort of typified that. Plenty of chances, though. Duisburg were the better side. There's a reason why Niklas Lohm is in the kicker team of the week, and that's because he played very, very well, made some very crucial saves in this one. And Matthew, as much as there isn't much to say about it, Sandhausen were probably a little bit lucky to come away with a point in this one.
Yeah, very. They were poor for the game, and you're right in saying that Niklas Lohm had an excellent game. He was pretty much the difference in what was a pretty, in terms of standard of football, was a pretty ordinary game, all told. Some pretty woeful finishing from Duisburg, and yeah, I think, you know, in context of the table, obviously Sandhausen would be delighted with the point, but you know, that there's still a lot of work ahead for both sides.
There certainly is, and we've obviously discussed how these two sides are faring earlier on in the programme, but nevertheless, Eva, probably one result where Sandhausen can be happier, despite what Torsten Lieberknecht was saying. I don't really know. Would you say that Duisburg are the happier side, even though they were the better team and probably should have won this one?
Yeah, I don't know. Especially although they're both said or would say that they're happy with the draw, for them or for both sides, it would have been a huge step forward to actually win that game. And I think although Duisburg would have been the more likely a team to win, I think in the end, Sandhausen had their fair share of that one as well. So they had a couple of chances, I think, in the last 10 minutes or so. But yeah, that's probably how you play when you're at the bottom of the table. You don't have the strength to maybe score last minute. So at least they can say, okay, we didn't lose. That's a step forward as well.
And speaking of sides who are bottom of the table or close to, in this case, Ingolstadt certainly fit that bill, and thankfully Armenia aren't close enough to warrant that tag yet, or at least weren't part of our poll for the first section of this show. Eva, we'll hand it over to you. You didn't see this one live, of course. You were on the way back home, but at least it's not a loss.
Yeah, but how they draw, that was, I think, so I was there from the beginning. I think a lot of people hope to more or less see the same starting 11, like they started against St. Pauli, because as we said last week, Lukoki was really great, Schütz, even Stauder. But first of all, Pruna couldn't play due to a knee injury, I guess. So that was coming in. And then I really don't understand why he changed again, although I'm a huge fan of Behrend, but then Saga out, Berna still in, and I'm always going that season, Berna is not good in the defense, not at all. And as I heard, it was a horrible match. It was the first time I was really grateful that mobile data in Germany is the worst. I'm really happy that they at least managed to score in the end. Klevin had some very good moments, so that's good. And you could see in the end, I think they had a banner up on the Ultras with Jeff Bleib Jeff, so at least the whole fans, or a lot of fans, stand behind Jeff Sabena, which is very good for the team confidence. But we have to win against Duisburg because and Sandhausen, that are two matches that come up in the near future, and they should really, really win those.
It would be a big change in fortunes if you do manage to pick up 6 points in those games, and it would propel you up the table to a nicer position than you are in at the moment, especially considering those sides are directly behind you. Matthew, what did you make of this one? Maybe from more of an Ingolstadt perspective, was it 2 points dropped?
Yeah, I think they had the better quality chances, but it's been the story for them all season, their inability to take advantage of those chances and convert them. And as was the case, once again, they found a way to drop points, and that's where you would have to credit you want to credit Bielefeld for finding that goal through Fabian Klose. But on the goal, you can show how atrocious they are at defending. I mean, Klose had an absolute paddock inside the 6-yard box to head that ball to any direction he wished. He was always going to score. But I think on the positive for Ingolstadt, I mean, Almar Cohen played. He was the one who got the goal. Now it's whether he can build that relationship with Kirschbaumer and whether they can get the likes of Kittel back into form and building a formidable midfield partnership for Alexander Nuri. Otherwise, it's going to be a very, very cold winter in Ingolstadt.
It most certainly will be. And that is it for our Group 2 roundup. It's time to move on to Group 3. Yes, we will kickstart Group 3 with the league leaders. That is HSV. They kept up their great form under Hannes Wolf, but did concede a first goal under his stewardship. They went 1-0 up against Awa through Pierre-Michel Lasoga. Awa did hit back through Clemens Fandrich, but HSV took charge and managed to get over the line in somewhat convincing fashion, I would say. It's another good performance away from home from HSV, which continues that sort of logic that the big teams do better away from home when they don't have teams sitting back so deep against them. Matthew, a fairly confident and competent performance.
It was, and you know, the confidence didn't wane after Clemens Fandrick equalised 2 minutes after HSV went ahead, and you know, they continued their game plan. They plucked away, they created opportunities, and eventually they were able to crack what was a pretty resilient our defence. And you know, I mean, they were the better side for pretty much the entire game, Hamburg. And yeah, the turnaround from Hannes Wolf has been a very positive one for the club. You know, they're unbeaten since he's taken over. And yeah, it seems to be onwards and upwards for Hamburg, who, you know, are starting to take a little bit of command in the league.
They are indeed. Whether or not they can maintain that 3-point advantage from now until Christmas remains to be seen. But at the moment, 13 games in, they are doing just fine as they bid to make their return to Bundesliga at the first time of asking. Eva, what did you think of this one? Pretty clear win for HSV in the end, I would say, but Aued certainly didn't disgrace themselves.
No, I think they showed a lot of courage throughout the game, and all in all, it was a pretty good game. But yeah, HSV just has the confidence at the moment, and since Hannes Wolf is coach, you have to credit them as well that they do a great job. It's the fourth win in a row, and yeah, Aued wasn't really able to create real chances in the end. So yeah, maybe not in with two lead in the end, but it was a deserved win for HSV.
And moving on from HSV to their city rivals, St. Pauli, they couldn't match the exploits of their rivals. They, not fell to a 1-1 draw, but came back down a 1-1 draw, we should say, against Heidenheim. They went ahead through Mark Schnatterer, who else? And St. Pauli managed to hit back through Henk Veerman, who continues to be a threat off the bench. Veerman is definitely pushing for a start, that much is for sure. Matthew, I don't know, I didn't see this one because Sky was being an absolute menace for me on Sunday. I eventually got it working halfway through the second half, which was great timing, really, to see absolutely nothing happen, apart from Jan, but we'll get on to that. What did you think of this one?
I mean, it was a pretty fair result. I think, you know, both teams, you know, had their chances, and I think Heidenheim will probably be more happy with the result. I mean, you know, the Millantor is a tricky place to play, but as we're seeing this season, this Heidenheim team has, you know, come a long way from the team that played last season. You know, they're playing a much better football. They saw Robert Glatzel make his return from injury off the bench, and they'll hope he can get back in the goals after the international break. And and for St. Pauli, I think it's maybe one that they might think has got away. I mean, you know, Henk Veerman did score, but it's the fourth goal that he scored in a non-St. Pauli win. So maybe that's an unfortunate omen that he carries. But he's certainly an option for them going forward. And, you know, if he can continue his form off the bench scoring, I can't imagine he won't be starting anytime soon.
Or is it one of those ones where the player that comes off the bench plays better when they do come off the bench? I think we see that with a few players in this league, and it'll be interesting to see whether or not that's almost been agreed, that Veerman comes off the bench and sees what he can do. Eva, a point apiece for both sides, probably the fair result in the end.
Yeah, I think it was a very entertaining match with two of the best teams at the moment. So they're both are very good in form. I think before that match, St. Pauli managed to get 16 points out of the previous seven games, and Heidenheim 14 or so. Oh, I'm not quite sure. I think something like that. So that were was top notch of the league at that moment. Yeah, I think Zancari had more possession of the ball, but Time 9 was very dangerous through their counter-attacks. And then we have the same top pick every week. Having Max Natara in the team is always a huge advantage. But Zancari was also better in the last minute. So all in all, that is a deserved draw. And I think a draw that both sides could live in the end.
Yeah, I think it's a fair result and a fair point for both sides. Our final game of our match day 13 review comes in the form of Magdeburg against Jan Regensburg. This is a game that, of course, seen Jens Hertel lose his job. A 3-2 defeat, which looked for so long like it was going to be a 2-1 win. Then Jan, as Jan have somehow managed to do over these past couple of weeks, turn on the form late on and pick up another very impressive result. This time it was a win, of course, against Bochum and Union. They had managed to draw. This one went the way that they wanted it to. Matthew, we're speaking about players coming off the bench. Hamid El Gadouri is doing wonders when it comes to scoring late goals. I think that's the 94th and the 95th minute now. He's building up quite a reputation and quite a collection. What did you think of Jan?
Well, they've got the character built in them to never give up, and no game is lost until the final whistle. And once again, they've done it. And you know, credit to them. And they're proving us wrong in the sense that last season they were very, very poor away from home, and this season they finding ways to pick draws up, and this win against, you know, sure it's a struggling Magdeburg side, but you know, it's impressive nonetheless that with 10 minutes to go they're down 2-1 and they've found goals from, you know, Marcel Correa and Al Gadouya. So they've been very impressive, and we both kind of agreed at the start of the season that they would be one of the surprise teams, and they continue to do
so. People laughed at us for that, Matthew, but we stayed strong. We're not easily turned. No. Eva, a disappointing defeat for Magdeburg, of course, which we've spoken a little bit about, but as you say, maybe changing the coach isn't going to be a bad thing at all, and maybe if they get Uwe Neuhaus, it could be just what they need.
Yeah, it's a new perspective on the whole situation. Maybe that is what they need right now. They were very, very unlucky, but I guess it's same that a lot of teams at the bottom have at the moment. If you don't have the self-confidence to turn that such a game around that Regensburg has, for example, it's something like when you're on top of the league, you win those matches, and if you're on the bottom, you lose them. Nevertheless, if you're in the lead or not, I really hope for them that they will turn around the current situation. Although I definitely hope they will be not above Armenia in the end, but yeah, fingers crossed. I think they have a good team. They have a decent team, and they can do better.
Yeah, I think more to come from Magdeburg is the one thing that we can say. That is our Match Day 13 roundup complete, and we hope you've enjoyed. And we actually have more than one question for once. We are going to start off with Danny's, though, at KDanny41, who asks, when has God died? Danny, I'm sorry for what has happened to Foot. This is what happens when you go to two Bochum games when we're leading by two goals and it causes us to draw both. So I like to think of this as karma and not the fact that God has died. So we'll see how that goes. That's a personal answer from that one. But Danny, yes, make sure you keep listening to The Score. Friday, 1-3, Lisburn's 98 FM for all your Irish League chat. Shameless plug. At Still Penguin, he is back once more. Good to have him as well. At Still Penguin 3 on Twitter. He has two questions. So actually we have five. So we've done well here today. First of all, what do you think of Hannes Wolf since he's had some Zweite Bundesliga games under his belt? And secondly, do you think Union Berlin has what it takes to stay in the promotion playoff spot? Matthew, what do you think?
Well, the first question of Hannes Wolf, I mean, he shored up the defence in his first few games, which has been, you know, a little bit of an issue for them this season. The only question is whether they can continue to be, you know, threatening attacking-wise. You know, he does like to play that defensive style of football. But I think so far, so good. The impression is good considering, you know, the lead-in for him, and yeah, I think overall they're you know, he's got them to top. They've got the buffer, so I think from a Hamburg's point of view, that's exactly what they would have wanted him to do, and he's done so far. For Union, they do have the pieces. We've talked about it quite a lot. They just need to find a consistent goal scorer, and I think you know, when Sebastian Polter has started, you know, the two games he started, he's got three goals. So, I mean, it tells you that he's, you know, when given the delivery, he can find the back of the net. And I think if he can continue to scoring and if the supporting cast can chime in, there are a good chance of being in that playoff spot.
Ivo, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I'm not completely sure because, yeah, in the end, you cannot really reach you cannot manage to be promoted, just like play some draws and then win one game. And I think it's really, I can probably better answer that question like around the winter break or so, because it depends how they continue to play now after having a one against Fürth. So yeah, then there's more to say about that.
We will see how things develop as the time goes on. Daniel at Yaboa17, big fan of Tony. Why do they hate HSV at kicker? They're fourth from bottom of their player rankings, and Pollersbeck is 17th from 18th of goalkeepers, despite the fact he's kept 8 clean sheets. Or does it mean if HSV get better, it's game over for everyone else? Personally, I think it's one of those things where you have the best/second best team in the league, depending on what way you want to look at Köln, and you're expected to be the best team in the league, bar Köln, every single week. And under Tietz, that maybe wasn't the case. That maybe wasn't happening as regularly as we thought. And that's probably why that is how it is. I also don't think Julian Pollersbeck has had that much to do. And when you go back and look at some of the games where he's made a couple of mistakes with his feet and whatever, maybe that's why he's not as high rated as some of the others. I think when you do look at goalkeepers in this league, there are an awful lot of good goalkeepers who are getting an awful lot of shots week in, week out, and that might just be why he is where he is. I do think that they do rate some teams quite unfairly, and as you say, when a defence keeps clean sheets, you would imagine that they have done their job. But you still see HSV players getting 3.5-4 when maybe 2.5-3 would be a bit more appropriate. I don't know. That's just how I would look at it. But I do think if it does suggest that there is more to come from this HSV side, and there's maybe no kicker conspiracy towards HSV, but we will see. Our final question comes from Robert. It's also a two-part question. So at Robert9876543 on Twitter, you'll remember that one. After frankly poor form and un-Köln-like play, I'll get there eventually, for four successive games, has Anfang found a solution in the new 4-3-1-4-2? Dear me, we're taking a while to get through these today. With Cordoba and Tirada up front, or was it luck and poor defending on Dresden's part? Matthew, you can kick us off with that one.
I think the sample size is maybe too small. I mean, he's only used the system once. So the suggestion would be after the international break, if he continues to use that system and it wields plenty of goals and limits the amount of opportunities that the opponents have on goal, then you would suggest it's a success. But it's really too early to say. I don't think it was luck. Some of the defending was quite sus, but yeah, Cohen just had one of those days where everything they put on goal was going to end up in celebration time for the fans. And too early, I would say. Too early to suggest the formation.
I think Marcus Anfang is a tactical revolutionary, but that's just me. Eva, how did you see that one playing out?
Yeah, I would agree with Matthew. It's like we don't have enough games to really see how that one will go out. It was an exceptional game, I think. Dresden wasn't in the game, and Terodde was back at it. But you can't really say that it was a new solution. It's a new solution already if you or only seen it once. So
I'm pretty confident going forward, though. But we'll see. I have just got a notification on my phone that there is a Toy Story 4 trailer out now. So that's what I'm about to do as we finish. I hope you've all enjoyed and enjoyed the fact that I've been unable to speak for the last 5 minutes, but that's just how things go. Until we speak to you again, thank you, Matthew. Thank you, Eva. It's been a pleasure once more. We'll speak to you next week. And, I can't even say enjoy your weekend of Zweite Bundesliga football. Enjoy your weekend of Northern Ireland saving themselves in the UEFA Nations League. And Terodde not being picked for Germany again. It's a farce. Goodbye.